And welcome to the latest episode of UCL Business's Big Talks on Big Impact podcast. UCL Business, or UCLB, is the commercialization company for UCL. And this is where we meet amazing people bringing about positive change through commercializing their ideas and research. Now, today I'm joined by Professor Amit Nathwani from the UCL Cancer Institute and Dr. Rick Fagan from UCL Business, who have been on a 10-year journey together to transform the lives of people with the world's first one-time treatment for severe hemophilia A. Now, Professor Nathwani's groundbreaking gene therapy research, coupled with Dr. Fagan's commercialization process, have got us to this point here, where this treatment has now been licensed for use in patients in the US and across the EU, potentially changing hundreds of thousands of lives. Professor Nathwani, Dr. Fagan, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. Professor Nathwani, perhaps we could start with you. Can you start by telling us a little bit more about what severe hemophilia A is and how it affects people's lives and what the conventional treatments have been up until this point?
Yes, of course. Hemophilia is a rare condition that affects the blood's ability to clot. It's inherited, and most people who have it are males because the factor 8 and factor 9 genes that are affected are carried on the X chromosome. Patients who have a severe form of hemophilia are individuals where the levels of normal clotting proteins in the blood are less than 1% of physiological. And so in essence, they have no functional clotting protein, factor 8 or factor 9, whether it's hemophilia A or hemophilia B. And in that setting, these individuals are prone to what's called spontaneous bleeds. And by that, what we mean is there is no apparent trauma. So these people may be just walking and suffer a bleed in their joints. These bleeds can occur unexpectedly, occur in hard-to-treat sites like in the brain or within the abdominal cavity, and quite often are fatal. Now, current treatment for hemophilia A across the world consists of administering the proteins that are either isolated from blood or synthesized in the laboratory, so-called recombinant factor 8 or factor 9 proteins. And these have been life-changing. They have converted what is otherwise a life-threatening bleeding disorder to one where patients can enjoy near normal quality of life. The downside of these protein therapies is that factor 8 and factor 9 have a very short half-life. In other words, once you administer them, and they have to be administered intravenously, the protein disappears very quickly from the circulation, which is where it's needed to protect from bleeding. And so you have to give frequent administrations of these proteins. And you can imagine, because it's given intravenously, this is really very invasive, very demanding, and also very expensive. The lifetime cost of hemophilia in the UK, hemophilia A or B, is in the tens of millions of pounds for the lifetime of the patient. So it's very expensive treatment. And even with all of that effort put into treating patients, a significant number of patients continue to have bleeds. In other words, the treatment is not curative, it's more palliative, halts the process. And for those individuals, we felt that a gene therapy type approach, a one and done approach, where you give the vector once, leading to endogenous expression synthesis of the protein on a 24/7 basis for the lifetime of a patient potentially, would be the right solution. And this is what made us embark on our journey for creating these one-time opportunities for patients with hemophilia.
I'm very interested in that moment when you realized that a radical new treatment was possible, was necessary? You've been at the edge of treating patients because you're the director also of the Catherine Dormady Haemophilia Centre and Thrombosis Unit at the Royal Free in London. So, you know, you've seen thousands of patients. What can you remember a moment when you thought there must be a better way?
So you're quite right that patients are often the inspiration to developing new therapies. But actually, the eureka moment occurred when I was doing research in blood coagulation, working with Professor Ted Tudnam. And in those days, we were basically using electroporation to introduce a bacterial gene into human endothelial cells. These are cells that line our blood vessels. And we were doing it very successfully. And it made me realize that, look, if I can put in a bacterial gene, then why the hell can I not put in, pardon the pun, can I not put in a therapeutic gene? Because that would be much more meaningful for treatment of patients. And really what we were trying to do at that time or thinking about doing is to emulate the success of vaccines, which, you know, globally have had a huge impact on saving lives. A single administration of the measles vaccine, for example, could protect individuals for their lives, for the lifetime of those patients. And so that's what we were trying to achieve with gene therapy, that if we could have endogenous correction and expression for a genetic disorder, that would transform the lifestyle of patients and would make a difference not just in the Western world, but also in the developing world, where, you know, clotting factors, protein concentrates are unaffordable because of the lifetime costs associated with
them. As you say, whichever way you look at it, a potentially an amazingly transformative new therapy. In simple terms, if you could explain to someone like myself who is not an expert, how does the gene therapy, the Roctavian treatment, work as a one-off infusion to treat hemophilia A? From what you've said so far, it's a gene replacement vehicle, I understand.
Absolutely. So basically, what we're trying to do is substitute for the abnormal gene that an individual's inherited. And so we basically add into the cells of that individual a normal copy of the gene that is fully functional, produces normal functional clotting factor. And so the challenge is, how do you deliver that to that normal gene to the right cell? And so we thought a lot about this, and we learned that viruses have evolved over time to carefully and selectively release their payload in the target cells. And so we decided that actually we would use nature's gene delivery vehicle, which are viruses, essentially modify them to make them safer so that they don't cause the viral infection, but use their ability to deliver the gene to deliver the normal copy of the factor VIII gene. And so we used a virus called adeno-associated virus. This is a very small virus. I sometimes feel God created AAV, as I call it, for gene therapy of hemophilia. Not really the case, because it's also used for other genetic conditions. But it works really very well. It's non-pathogenic, so even when you get an infection with AAV, wild-type AAV, without genetic modification, it doesn't leave behind a long-term sequelae, doesn't cause any abnormalities. We modify it, we put in the normal factor VIII gene into AAV. It's given as a simple infusion, very much like a hemophilia patient injects their clotting factor. This is essentially an infusion that lasts an hour. The virus is clever. It makes its way to the liver, where most clotting factors are made. releases the payload into the liver cells, and it stays there, not embedded within our chromosomes, within the chromosome of the patient, but predominantly outside of the chromosome of the patient, which is an important safety advantage. And from there, it can drive the synthesis and expression of factor VIII levels that essentially protect patients.
I think you're being a bit modest, Amit. It wasn't as easy as just taking the wild type factor VIII gene and putting it into the AAV virus, because AAV viruses have, if we call the gene the payload, AAV viruses have a certain amount of payload that it can take. And the factor VIII gene exceeds that payload limit. So Amit and his research team had to do a lot of tinkering in order to basically pare down the gene whilst keeping it its activity. So it wasn't easy.
It's an extraordinary amount of extremely technical cutting edge research to get to that point. But of course, here we are 10 years on, as I mentioned at the beginning, patients have now started receiving this in areas of the world where it's been licensed. But there's a huge journey to go on from the lab to the market like that. And as director of Biopharm at UCL Business, you know, you specialize in that commercialization process for advanced medical therapeutics. It's notoriously challenging to get from the lab to the market. There's so many hurdles. When did you first come across Professor Nathwani's research, and what did you feel about its potential at the time?
Well, what I could say is it's been longer than 10 years. I've been working with Amit for nearly 20 years. I joined in 2006. And Amit was instantly on my radar. And probably about 2009, he and I started working kind of exclusively together. Not just the excellent science, but a very entrepreneurial nature to Amit. He knew a lot about commercialization, patenting, very engaged with ourselves. And, I think some of that probably came from the stint that he had at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, where he was involved in developing another gene therapy for hemophilia B, not A, which is factor IX related hemophilia, and was involved in the commercialization process there as well. But of course, we do it much better here, don't we, Amit?
Absolutely.
How do you initially go about assessing whether medical research has kind of got what it takes to go the distance, Rick? What's the sort of process that you go through to assess whether it's got what it takes?
So, you know, we're a technology transfer organization working with academics like Amit and himself. And in academia, you must publish. And in regards to that, we end up filing patents much earlier than, say, if I worked at a company like BioMarin, they would wait much longer to file a patent. So what we see, Nigel, is very early, really pretty early stage technologies, and we just have to take a punt and we'll file a patent. Many will fail, few will succeed, and even fewer will return significant revenue. you just got to, and with working with someone like Amit, it's easy because just doesn't talk the talk, he walks the walk as well. You know, he delivers. So, it's a no-brainer when Amit tells me I've got something new and we should talk about it, etc. In tech transfer world, we do end up filing many patents very early, and many of which go nowhere. So there isn't a crystal ball that I can look into and say, this is going to make it. Unless we were filing a patent at the point where, say, we had some phase 1B clinical trial data and it looked very good, et cetera, then I might just say, yeah, I think this one's probably looking good.
You mentioned the BioMarin there is the company that licensed the technology and conducted the clinical trials. Can you tell us a bit more about that collaboration with them? Because that's been a long journey as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, so that itself was 10 years. In 2009, we filed the first patents with Amit on the factor VIII gene therapy, and then another in 2013. And simultaneously with that second patent filing, Amit and his team published a paper in a very high-profile journal. I think it was Blood, was it not, Amit?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Which showed that this new configuration of the factor VIII gene in the AAV vector had very positive results in models of hemophilia, in animal models of hemophilia. So we had sort of in vivo proof of concept, which looked very promising. And that sparked the interest of a number of companies, one of which was BioMarin. And we engaged with them. And in 2013, we ended up licensing to them the two patents. And, you know, they've been an excellent partner so far, and I'm sure Amit will agree. What we licensed to them was a preclinical asset in 2013. And in 10 years, they took that all the way through the whole clinical trial process and got it to marketing approval is really a testament to them. That's very, very fast. You know, they really put a lot of effort behind it. We liked them so much, we licensed in 2019 another one of our technologies, not one of Amit's, different professor, to BioMarin, and they progress that. That's in the clinic right now. So they're really a good partner to work with.
I mean, it's notoriously a rocky road going through clinical trials. Was there a moment, Professor Nathwani, when you knew this was it? That was it was actually going to go all the way and make it to market?
I think we got an impression pretty early on when we did animal studies that showed that we were seeing nice levels of expression that would be protective in humans, and that these levels of expression were sustained for many years, years of follow-up of those animals. So that essentially gave us the confidence based on the fact that we'd done this before with hemophilia B, and, you know, the clinical phenotype for hemophilia A and B is very similar, is identical, in fact. You know, gave us the confidence that, look, you know, that this is likely to work. But you never know until you do the clinical trial. And I have to be honest that the clinical trial data for hemophilia A is marginally different from that for hemophilia B. Which we would not have predicted from the animal studies.
And so come last year, 2023, a huge pivotal moment when the treatment was licensed first in the US and then shortly after in the EU for use in patients.
The other way around.
Oh, sorry, I apologize. It was EU and then the US. How did you feel when those approvals were confirmed? That was a big milestone.
Absolutely phenomenal milestone. Humbling is the way I would put it, because as clinicians or clinician scientists, we all want to be involved in drug discovery, drug development. But it's not often that you can take a drug all the way through to market approval so that many more patients can benefit from the discovery, the innovation. Yeah, it was great. It was fantastic to see that this was now available on the market and many more patients would benefit from the impact of gene therapy for hemophilia. And so, yeah, exciting.
I agree very much. I mean, yeah, very, very few people see a medical treatment they've worked on make it to market just because of the fact of the nature of the business. It's, you know, it's very, very risky. It's riddled with failures, etc. Even fewer have been involved in A, the invention, making the invention, B, the patenting, and then seeing it getting all the way to the market. Like, I feel privileged, and I think it's just really exciting for Amit, for UCLB, and for UCL to get this important treatment on the market.
And I guess that also fires you with hope and enthusiasm with some of the other similar and unrelated technologies that are going to solve some of the big medical challenges of our time, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, for me, the next exciting thing in gene therapies is probably currently what we're talking about, like hemophilia A. They're what's called monogenetic diseases. There's only one gene involved in the etiology of the gene. Many diseases like cancer or have multiple genes involved in the etiology of the gene of the disease, not always the same, different in different people. I think it would be very exciting to see gene therapy now enter the realm where they start tackling some of these more complex diseases.
And Professor Nathwani, the first patients, as we've said, now being treated in both the US and the EU. Overall, what are your hopes for the future for this treatment for hemophilia A, and indeed the treatment for hundreds of thousands more people around the world with the condition?
So, you know, we are at the beginning of the journey for gene therapy for hemophilia. It's great to see that it's available on the market and adults can be treated. We want to make sure that it's available to everyone in the world that has hemophilia A. We also want to make sure that ultimately this treatment moves from being focused on adults to also being available to children. And that would make a huge impact because many of the patients that we treat with gene therapy already have damaged joints as a result of recurrent frequent bleeds. And that's not something we can change at this late stage. But if we started gene therapy early in children, then it would be possible to avoid these lifelong disabilities that many of our patients suffer and endure. And it would make a big difference to the hemophilia community.
It's a wonderful prospect and such an exciting future ahead, a wonderful way to finish as well. Thank you, Professor Nathwani and Dr. Fagan, so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you too for listening. And if you've enjoyed this discussion, do look out for our other episodes of Big Talks on Big Impact, wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.